man, I forgot to rewind this one. Hold on.
Start over.
Oh, jeez. But, you know, when you have those separate stories and you all meet and you figure out how it works together, that's always a really exciting moment. Yeah. Right? Yeah. When all you guys hear the same noise and you all know you're within range. Yeah. It's like, oh, something big here.
And Wolfie was very apologetic for, like, the delays, but I don't know. It paid off in the end.
I think he did it well. I think he'd managed it the best it could have been done. Like, you can't, with so many different stories happening, like, there's only so much you can do to try and bring it all together. Because you can't just be like, oh, you're in the woods now, and you're in the woods, and you're in the woods.
Yeah.
How did we get there? And, well, how does it fit with the story?
There's the element of being a DM and having to realize that, okay, well, Magnus is going to get in this simple little bar fight, and he's going to kill everyone, and then he's going to leave, and Taro's going to get in this fight in the village, and they're all going to do things, and 20 minutes later, they're all going to meet up.
Yeah.
Well, Magnus' fight takes 45 minutes, and Taro's fight and story and do this, you know, of having to adjust to your players. And when everyone's playing at the same time, it's a little easier than when you're working on these individual storylines.
And I think the kind of the moral to the story, and I've heard other podcasts talk about this, is don't ever split up the party. Unless that's kind of your plan or you have a co-DM. Yeah. So just
when
to
we
say
can take
that,
a certain group aside.
Don't leave players who came to play hanging and not doing anything.
Right.
I think for me, when that happens, and this kind of goes back to when I first watch you guys play D&D, it doesn't matter if I'm just watching you play. I'm just like,
yeah, I was having fun watching. And I understood that this session was kind of unique.
This was
we were bringing in a new character.
And I think that expectation was pretty clear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think as a DM, when it comes to splitting up the group, it's just you need to manage it and be able to not get yourself lost in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. There's a point where it's like, okay, you're in the middle of a fight. I realize that, but this person hasn't been able to play for 10 minutes. Let me move over there and get them a little bit, you know, and just being able to keep on going through. And it really seems like Wolfie did a great job on that.
He did. Yeah. He did. Yeah. And I also think that as players that we are also pretty well aware of that, too. Like we were saying, we didn't spend a half hour of game time investigating the statue that turned Violet into
right. We were into in liquid. Touch with the reality.
We were just like, okay, we need to move on. We know where this is going.
And like, it reminds me of like when you are just starting a party up and that age old complaint of like, I don't know if I trust this guy. But it's like, dude, he's playing the character across the table for you, and I have this adventure you're going to play. Just fucking trust him so we can get on to the, I don't know if my character wouldn't like him. Like, come on.
No, you want to role play your character.
Yeah. But there are times
to
where...
To a degree.
Exactly.
Well, but you also want to
when
play
when you're
a game.
Hogging the spotlight for no reason other than...
Yes.
When I see an instance of this in the right. session, though.
Exactly.
In about 3 minutes.
Yeah. in game... Well, I suppose in about 30 seconds. And
yeah.
In
time. So let's move on to it. Right. So what happens is all of us, three different groups, Boddington and Tobias and Taro and Magnus... all come into this room in separate cave entrances.
Right.
And it's this huge, I'm kind of thinking Indiana Jones Temple of Doom, big cave where there's a lot of monsters going around and there's lots of other openings.
But our openings
really
are up close to
up.
The ceiling.
Yeah.
And we're looking
and
down
yeah,
like 50
we're on
feet.
Ledges. And it was super cool. And I think that was just like, yes. And like Mako, you were just saying, it's exciting when we all come together. Well, Wolfgang puts on this huge map and we're all looking at this and there's tons of monsters out there and we're just getting pumped.
And they're all down there below, not seeing us, but we see each other. So I look over and I'm like, Magnus! But in my like, loudest whisper.
And Tobias slaps his hand over Boddington.
And at the same time, Magnus is waving, you know, really excited to see Boddington. And he's like, Boddington, shh, and then holds up his finger. And
then after a little while, I look over and I'm kind of like, who's that little guy over there? Because we see Taro after
a little grumpy
bit.
Guy.
And so I think both Boddington and Magnus from their separate cave entrances are like, hi, Taro, random halfling we don't know. We're just going to wave at you because we like everyone.
Not saying the words. They're just like waving. Like, you can't really see us right now as we're enacting this.
But then...
Pantomiming does not make for good radio.
But
so
then...
I just say real quick, you know, thank you to Wolfgang for this really cool room and this. Mm-hmm. There are lots of dynamic things going on. He's very good at taking things on the fly. And also, I think it's kind of cool that this whole area that we're in is underneath Westwall, right?
Yeah, right.
So we're in Westwall, and there's this whole underground thing, and it's called Nightwall.
Yep.
Right?
Darkwall, Nightwall.
A Nightwall. I do believe it's Nightwall.
So there's Westwall, there's Nightwall.
Yes, Nightwall.
And it's just kind of this cool, it's like the positive to the negative or the mirror image. Yeah. I don't know, through the looking glass. It's kind of cool. So thanks to Wolfgang for this very cool kind of convenient dungeon that's right under our feet.
Yeah. And sure, it's a party looking from a safe distance down at these monsters that we're going to go fuck with now. But with that background, we are in this scope of just coming back to see each other again and the scope of being part of this town. It's like you have to have that sense of storytelling scale that it is much more than just a simple, okay, we're going to roll initiative and kill stuff.
And I think that was cinematic. And yeah. That's what I love those moments.
Right. Yeah. High five, Wolfgang.
I was also going to give Wolfgang a compliment, but God, I feel like we're going to build up his ego.
Okay, so let's say what he did wrong.
Wolfgang sucks. No, but actually, I think
that was Megan, not Nicole.
Just to clarify,
don't take away my plus one roster.
But I think that one of the things that was cool is that we're in this situation where we're all, you know, obviously Tobias and Byington and Magnus are like, okay, well, how can we all get together and figure this out? And there's this halfling who doesn't like anyone, doesn't get anyone, and there's two...
Has no reason
to trust us whatsoever. And there's a little fucking colorful gnome and, at this point, a humanoid figure that he can't tell what is a half-orc.
Because,
and then Tobias is probably crabby and slapping Byton in the back of the head. Yes. And
would you trust these people?
Would you trust these people, right? And so Wolfie let us kind of play it out where Magnus and Taro are having a conversation where...
A pantomime
conversation, which we're not going to do because that wouldn't make sense.
It goes like this, wait.
Or it was pretty...
And then it's like this.
It was pretty entertaining.
And then I did this.
Yeah.
But that basically Nicole and I had this actual pantomiming conversation at the table while other things were going on.
Yeah. And it was perfect because usually when people are having cross-table conversations, even in character while the DM's trying to do something, you know, you can't help but have it distract because it's making noise against the other noise.
Well, what it sounds
this
like
one was
all pantomime. You know, we're all like, I'm, you know, pointing over towards where Boddington and Tobias are, and I'm trying to motion that Magnus will help Taro kill these things.
By
hacking at it with an axe and pretending to shoot things with crossbows, and like, you and me, we're buddies, we're pals.
It makes sense because both of you are fighter classes, and fighter classes would have kind of a simple kind of, you know, that marine type style thing, look, spot.
But the funny thing is that Taro just doesn't get it. He's so, like looking at him like, I guess. Like, you can't see my face right now, but it's like
astonishment and confusion. Like, what do you want me to do? And so then Wolfie had us do this interesting little, okay, roll a joint,
what was sense motive
roll. And if your combined score is over so much, then you can understand each other.
That was kind of cool.
Yeah. And I thought that was cool because, really, we could have just made it where I say this and you say, okay, yes, I'll fight with you and we'll go be buddies and pals. But that's not really what the two characters would do. That's
the reality of the fantasy situation was, not really boding well in your favor to win each other over.
But then he had us do it a couple times to kind of continue these, because, you know, then at one point I'm trying to get Taro to walk through the back through where he came from.
And I'm just like pointing, I'm like, no, I'm going to kill these things.
Yeah.
I need their ears.
Yeah. Money. Like,
is he having a hard time hearing us? Why, we're not even making noise. What is he trying to say?
And so eventually it all worked out. Yay.
We worked out funny, the background tunnels. Right?
I rolled like a 16 for one of those sense motives and she rolled a 3.
Yeah.
And so I was like, she's like, good.
And then whatever it was plus, our bonuses on it, we had to get like over 20 together.
So. Squeaked over.
Yeah.
But
regardless, we all met up in the back of one of the tunnels.
Yep.
And we started putting some plans together.
Actually able to whisper to one another now.
Yeah, and it was kind of like Taro was great, or Nicole was great playing Taro, I should say, and kind of saying that, hey, you know, what are you guys doing? And your plan is dumb, and why don't we just kill him? And
who are
you? I don't trust you.
Yeah.
You know, you want to kill him, so do I. I guess we're working together.
So then we started to try, Byington and Magnus started to try to do things to
win him over.
Win him over.
Oh my God.
That's what we do.
Yeah. And what else do you do? Give away gold.
Oh, not that, not yet.
Oh, yes, you did.
No, it was later.
No, it was later. It was at the end.
Was that afterwards?
Yeah. The first thing we did was.
I'm offering him up. This is where we had the conversation about, like, what's your second favorite food? Because
no, that was later.
Was that later too?
Yeah.
Oh boy,
because you're talking to the owl. Not to me.
Yeah.
So at this point, you know, we're trying to get Taro to do stuff, and I don't remember what we were offering, but then Magnus is like, you know, you said something about your owl being hurt, and Magnus
I didn't even say anything. You're like, your owl looks hurt. Do you want me to fix him? And I'm like, yes!
So I think I fed your owl a cure moderate, because that's what Magnus would do, right?
The owl's hurt. We must save the owl! Which I actually didn't bring it up to full.
Really?
Yeah, because I rolled I rolled like a 2 or something.
But I mean, it was pretty injured too.
But then
I did some healings, and then we kind of got ready. We basically buffed the party.
Yeah. I gifted you a Tanglefoot bag.
Yeah.
And I explained it to you as best I could, and I said, take this Tanglefoot bag there.
I debated throwing it at one point, and I think you were like right next to it, and I'm like, nah, probably not a good idea.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing I thought was that, you know, it was such a good character play when Byington gives Taro this Tanglefoot bag, and Taro's just like, why?
What are you doing?
Because you're big and scruffy and looking like a bear, so I'll call you Tear Bear.
Well, it'll get people to stick to things. And Taro's like,
I'll just shoot him with my crossbow.
I'll just shoot him. And you're like, no, you can use this too. And you're like, right now? He's like, no, when we're in the fight. And you're like, okay.
Like, why would I want to stick him to the ground
when I can
kill him? Like, who cares?
I don't get it.
Well, and not even like, I don't get it, I could kill him, but I don't get it. Why do you want me to use this right now?
Yeah, it was pretty much like,
no, just
like,
no, put it in your stash. It. Don't you have a stash? I've got a stash of ears. Okay, that's weird, but awesome. Everyone, it's cool to be a collector.
But the really funny thing is when you started calling him Tear Bear or something, I looked at Taro looked at Boddington and was just like, but I'm not a bear.
No, but you're like kind of fuzzy. Look at your feet. And you're like, you're going to like a bear.
But I'm tough. You know I'm not a bear, right?
No, yeah, you're right. And I let something slip about, I don't know.
Oh my God, what an awesome conversation.
We're talking about Toby, you know, which is Boddington and Magnus's fun little nickname for Tobias, which he hates. Now we got Toby and Tear Bear.
And I looked at him, I'm like, so you're Toby? And you're like, no, don't call me Toby.
I'm not Toby.
Okay, I don't.
And whenever, you know, Tear Bear had his back turned to me, I kind of like leaned in a little bit and
give him a little smell, you know, it's like, you know, get that, like, that's how a goblin would get to
know
someone.
No,
you're not a goblin. It
begins with
a
G.
It's funny because at one point, like, I was talking about goblins, I'm like, fucking gnomes.
Yeah.
You said it in front of Boddington, you're like, I mean, goblin.
Slip of the tongue. You guys are all right.
So then we decided to go into this room through the one entrance. Tobias got out a rope, which he secured, and was lowering Magnus down.
Actually, like I said, we got a chance to buff ourselves up before the fight.
Because they're all down there unsuspecting.
We normally don't really get a chance to do that, so we did a lot. You know, we did between bull strength, protection from evil, owl's wisdom, protection from energy.
Well, I think both you and I took bull strength and protection.
Pro evil. Mine was from spells, yours was from potions.
Because looking down at the valley, the cave valley as it were, there was a little stream going through it. There was some mounds, some other cave entrances in the middle. But there was a good share of were-rats and
Dire rats. And goblins.
There were some goblins. In fact, Wolf even pointed out, you recognized that one from the spellcaster from before.
And goblin dogs.
So there was a good mix of monsters that we were used to, and a not insignificant amount of each.
Would you call it a monster mash?
It was soon to be a graveyard smash.
It was. That's true.
So, one of the things that I thought was funny was that after we had done all this bulking ourselves up, we go in there and we're going to sneak down and we're going to lower Magnus down. Then Tobias is going to come down and then, you know, Boddington and Taro are going to sit up top and throw bombs and shoot arrows and we're going to take care of this. And
perfectly executed.
We're all fucking loud.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, we're all loud? Well, Boddington and Magnus are super fucking loud. All the time. So we got spotted right away.
But you know, it's kind of funny now. I'm not one to like give away Tobias's inner thoughts or workings too much, because as Jake has pointed out, I am a secretive motherfucker. I think that was podcast zero.
Yep.
He's just like, I don't get that Schlegel guy.
I say too much and you don't say enough.
I know. I'm like, guess what, guys? Guess what? My new score is for perception. Woo! I want to tell you.
This is going to be the surprise that I'm going to tell you about right now. I got to this for Christmas.
I used to get the rundown from her over the phone after each session.
Nice.
But anyway, Tobias is, although he has a good wisdom score, his intelligence is average. And I think that he is a little bit possibly, I don't know if it's that he's overconfident or that he's just not a very good planner, which maybe doesn't make sense with good wisdom. You think, oh, you know, street smarts, but I think that his wisdom plays more into certain abilities that are a bit innate, but maybe not so much smarts.
He's not untalented when it comes to being a cleric.
He's quite capable.
Yeah.
He's not very bright, or maybe he just doesn't take the time.
Doesn't think it through.
Yes.
It goes back to the story of, like, when we first, you know, when Violet and Boddington and Magnus go into the Temple of Kriya and they first meet Tobias. And Daphne is talking about Tobias as, like,
berating him.
Berating him. And I don't know what the story was that you did. Don't really know, but Tobias fucked something up huge. And this is his way to make up for it.
Yeah, I still fuck up things pretty well.
Yeah, but I mean, there's like this, it's that element of like, Tobias just is like, I can do this. I'm Tobias.
Yeah.
I know this shit. And then he's like,
he's got this big ego that comes from, I don't know what.
His enlarged person potion.
Yours is a potion.
Yeah. He's also, and I don't know if you want me to say this, but I know it's something that's been said around the table, that Tobias comes from nobility.
Yes.
And so I, you know, I've always basically had this image of Tobias as like, well, you're just a little rich kid.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Like, I can do anything I want. You're not necessarily talented, but you're, you know.
But
you
he's snotty about it.
You overcompensate.
Yeah, arrogant.
Probably.
And, yeah.
And Violet loves to mess with that ego of his.
But I have to say, you know, from a role-playing standpoint, it's so difficult to play this guy who's such a douchebag. I mean, so you distant really from... Right. I really have to stretch myself. What's so funny? What are you guys laughing at?
Because I almost sent an email the other day to Tobias@gmail.com and I was like, wait, that's not his name.
Oh, man.
It's challenging, I'm telling you. I'm such a good role player.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Same thing with me and Boddington.
Remember? Wait.
It never falls far from the tree.
Well, last time we had our little game night, and I brought over like 15 board games for one night of, you know, about 4 hours of playing games. It's like,
yeah, you are.
This is my wagon.
That was your wagon.
You are Boddington.
Remember, I'm... Like Magnus? Remember Baker? When we played that little your first DMing world
was
first game?
Like 4 or 5 sessions.
And I was playing a character that was like pseudo-related to Nikki's previous character. And Steve played a female bard that it's gave like her cheers.
Remember that blonde?
So she'd be like, go, team, go, you know.
And I would actually give the cheers. I made up cheers.
Cheers laid out that rhymed.
Yes.
You know.
And
that's how I did my spells.
Inspire Courage, you'll have that specific rhyme.
And song, I gave cheers instead of song.
And Wolfgang was the football jock
battle. Yeah, right.
And you were like this antisocial... Dirty Ranger.
Yeah, with like some crazy long backstory that Nikki and I wrote.
Right.
Also together.
But
and you were this like older paladin who just lost his whole family.
I know, it was a dark story, you know, and it's like
two paladins, a bard and a ranger.
And then I meet this other paladin who is a complete
optimism or positivity.
The power of positivity.
And I'm just like, what the hell?
And like Wolfgang's douchebag jock and that loved positivity.
Oh, he wasn't a douchebag.
Well, I mean, depending on your perspective.
But he was a jock, so jock's douchebags. Yeah, well.
Yeah. Sad. says the man who goes to the gym. And your two character, or Wolfgang's character and your character were like old friends and chums.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought that was an interesting change for you.
So, Nicole, let me ask you that, because your character, kind of like mine, is not like a friendly or fun character. It's kind of challenging.
It is. I was actually telling Megan this on the way home last week, that I was just like, it's really hard not to respond to Magnus and Boddington with like the...
positive.
Hey, you know?
Yeah, you're nice to me, then I'll be nice to you.
Yeah.
That's normal human nature.
Yeah. No, and that's kind of the characters that I've played is... they're more friendly, they get along with people, or...
Yeah, I mean, I would say that my limited amount of characters that I've played, one being, I played a cleric to Dionysus which was really fun. But with, you know,
the god Dionysus is the god of
wine and drunkenness
and parties.
So she was basically like a crazy whore. Her name was Lola Cabana, and at one point she even got pregnant in the campaign because you were like,
"What didn't
you're
she do?"
Around too much,
she,
Lola.
She got pregnant. She got married. Okay.
Oh, she got
this
married.
Is a different
to a,
story.
She got married to a ghost. Yeah,
or zombie.
A ghost zombie.
You made me.
I did what?
But then I played Antonio, who's this, like, you know, Michael. Casanova, has a Spanish lip.
Because everyone knows the dwarves that have a Spanish lip.
I love the dwarf. I love the
lip. You know, it was so funny, too, there that Lola and Scarlett got into a cat fight.
Oh,
that
they
was
did.
Like a, that was like one of the funniest moments, because it was like building up between them two girls.
And you let us actually like play out the mechanics of like me spanking. Bull rushing, and then yes. You like eventually trapped me and just spanked me.
Yeah, you had a grapple, yeah.
And then all of the creatures in the forest were like, whoa!
But then,
I wish cameras existed!
But, you know, the first character I played was also going back to that complete opposite of I played a antisocial ranger that had this big long backstory but basically didn't trust anyone, didn't talk to anyone. And I remember having a conversation with you after like maybe my first, and you were DMing Jake after my first or second session, being like, I'm not this quiet. I'm not being this quiet intentionally. Like, my character is this quiet.
Yeah. I want you guys wanted know to that put I'm, up like the in character sign.
Yeah, right? They're like, I'm in character, and that's why I'm not
because it was your first session at the table with us.
Yeah, but I had this whole huge, which is something that I do as a player with epically long backstories that often have nothing to do with what we're doing, but yep. Help me make sense
it's
of my
good
character.
To, yes. I think what you're getting at is that it's good to try different character concepts, and it's like sometimes
how
different can I be from what's been at the table before?
And from who I am sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
A lot of times I kind of catch myself looking at, okay, I'm going to make a new character. Look at it from a new race, a new class, going about it at that angle. But then sometimes I take the actual personality for granted and I end up playing a different class and race. But this is another part of kind of a similar sort of character.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing is, you could play two human fighters with the same stats and all.
Well, like we had
with, and you could play them completely different.
Yeah.
And it would feel different.
Mako's paladin.
Those rangers. Or the paladins.
Yeah, the
yes.
Two paladins mm-hmm. juxtaposed side by side.
Right.
And even like what we're doing with our campaign with the two gnomes juxtaposed side by side.
Yep.
I think that this is, the way we play it is, from what I understand, everything I'd ever heard about D&D before I started playing. You know, I pictured...
Which was all from me.
No, I mean not from you guys, but from like the popular culture world and
oh yeah,
Big Bang Theory, yeah. You know, like stuff like that.
Love that show.
But they're like playing, and they're like, okay, you walk into a dungeon, and you know, there's a dragon. That whole scene, I'm like, oh, we walked into a dungeon, and there's a dragon.
I wonder what you're
crazy.
Yeah. Big Bang Theory will be a sponsor for you as well if you would like to send us T-shirts of some sort.
Oh yeah,
please feel free to order six of us.
Six of us.
Contact us at
rpgafterglow@gmail.com.
Jesus.
This word brought to you by Bacardi,
and that wasn't a button that we hit just now.
Actually, Jake's
RPG. Stuck.
The button is stuck.
Can you be sponsored by Jameson too?
Yeah, sure.
Jameson.
Wait a minute,
Jameson
come on.
Irish whiskey.
Are we gonna get in trouble for naming up?
Wait.
We like any your products. Companies that want to send us samples, we will promote you on the air.
We're, yes. We like drinking. I don't know if you noticed.
And you will be marketed to tens of people.
It's a gold mine!
But every one of them will be a lucrative audience, I swear.
Going back to my point, was that we are a very creative bunch. Mm. And I think that all of us, you know, even Steve, you're the min-maxer. You're the person who likes to play this and that. But that is limiting you, because you're not actually just like that. You have stories, you have elaborate concepts of who your characters are, and I think we all do, of this is their motivation, this is why they do the things they do.
What they're looking for out of the role-playing experience.
Right, and there's times where you do things where your character would do something differently, and so you have to make that choice. Like the example of Magnus jumping out of that dungeon.
And letting the door close with him outside.
Right, where like the whole time I'm making that decision, I'm going, this is such a fucking terrible idea. This is gonna just fuck with the whole night. But that's what Magnus is gonna do.
Yeah.
So he did it. And I just think that's a fun part of how we play.
Yeah.
Part of that can happen, though, because of the length of the campaigns, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before, I've played with a couple other people, and they're just short one-night campaigns, and you don't have this time. You can go back to them later on, but it's just not the same.
It lacks that depth.
Yeah, the depth and the time, and because every Sunday, like Megan said, it's every Sunday. It's funny, when I met Jake's girlfriend for the first time, I was
at Megan's wedding.
I'm a little tipsy at the point, and I go up to her, I'm like, okay, the most important thing, you understand, D&D is every Sunday. It doesn't matter if it's your birthday. D&D is every Sunday.
Actually, it did matter this year, didn't it?
I know.
That was an exception, though.
There's exceptions, but, you know, it's that commitment and that...
And we're not like, you know, I gotta go do this on Sunday, so I can't make it, guys. Like,
yeah. No.
If you are in your town, if you can drive here...
Yeah. Unless you're out of
unless
town.
You're...
Well, and I drove back from Iowa to make sure I made it every weekend.
Yeah, there was
Well, and just sitting here listening to you guys, it's just like, oh, I wish I was here. Even though I was in this monster event with all the other GMs of my company, and it was like fun, and we're drinking, having a good time, I still wish I was here.
Well, yeah, like, even for me, when I was in Seattle, it was like, I'm in Seattle and having a great time, but I can hear the dice being rolled right now.
Well, and I think it never...
My head's out the window and I can hear it.
It never fails that when, you know, I did it when I was in Boulder last week, and you did it when you were in Seattle, where it's Sunday. And, I mean, I was in Boulder. The wedding that I went to was on Sunday night. I'm at the wedding reception. I pull up my phone, and I'm like, hey, guys, I miss you.
Roll some dice for me.
Yeah.
And I think I kind of have a concept of that, too, because I left for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. I, you know, only got a year in and then left. Coming back here was just like, I am so excited to be back at D&D. Yeah. Like, I don't care about anything else. It almost felt
like a TV show that you really like. Yeah, and that character goes off. Well, even just like that the show maintains and that character goes off in the story there. And you're like, oh, that I really like that character. And then two seasons later, you're like, they're back?
We have really evolved our role-playing since when we first started. I think back in the day, and Mako can back me up, you'd walk into the room, and it was a square room with a door. What's the monster inside? You fight the monster, you get the treasure. Okay, let's go to the next room.
Yeah.
And that was about it. And role-playing...
Why you were in that dungeon, what you were fighting for... Wasn't even really considered.
Sometimes it wasn't even...
Way back, and even then, you know, way back in the original D&D, they had enough mechanics and everything for the fighting and treasure and so forth, but the mechanics involved with the role-playing, they just didn't have anything.
They didn't have skills or feats.
No.
And I think that we have...
Was it even acknowledged?
No, not until later.
But really...
In advance, they acknowledged them, but they had no...
Purpose?
They had no real... They had no mechanical value.
Outside of combat,
you know.
Yeah, so like, I think that we've really evolved, even though that we are somewhat siloed. It's like all of us have played together forever. And
right.
But I mean, listening to podcasts and going out there and just looking up stuff on the interwebs.
Trying to get other experiences of role-playing outside of...
And letting girls into the group.
That was tough, yeah.
But, you know, and
I'm a pioneer.
I remember the conversations that we had about, like, you know, the most interesting one of your skills. I mean, not skills, but your one of the most important attributes.
Abilities,
savage world.
One of your most important abilities is the weakest ability. And that a lot of people are like, oh, there's this crappy one.
I rolled a 7 on something. Shit.
Put in charisma.
Dump that.
But...
As Taro and Tobias high-five each other. Low charisma.
But to be able to go,
that'd
no,
be a great
I'm going to...
Minus one charisma, just CHA.
God, I'm going
to
make
I'm going to put that low stat into something that's actually important to the character, and that actually makes...
It memorable.
It makes it memorable because, like, a fine example is Blondie. Blondie had really low dexterity.
Oh, God.
But he had great strength and everything. But Blondie likes to casually walk into a fight.
Right.
And let me tell you, that was hard. You guys would be in the fight, and I'm like, you guys would run ahead, and I'd be like, I walk. It's going to take me 2 rounds to get there, but I'm going to walk. Light a cigarette
or like,
along
yeah,
the
I
way.
Was going to say, I think while we were casting spells and drinking potions and getting buffed up, you're like, I'm looking for my smokes. Two rounds later, I find my smokes. We're in combat. I light my smoke.
You get hit by 9 arrows.
We get hit by 9 arrows. I get up out of the wagon because I realize that I should be contributing to this fight. You are 3 rounds away. I start walking.
Mako, I'm glad you brought up that point because I found myself kind of struggling with if you have someone who is maybe not that smart or not that wisdom, not that wise, or maybe not that wisdom, wisdom-y. Or let's say that they're first level. That could happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like maybe they would make some mistakes in combat that you wouldn't. Well, I know that I'm going to flank and avoid attacks of opportunity. It's hard to do that sort of thing to say I'm going to do something that's obviously not tactically sound.
Yeah,
I have a hard time doing that.
I think Megan and I are actually probably a little better at that being new players because sometimes you come in and you're like, I'm going to move here, and you're like. All of you guys are like, that's like 3 attacks of opportunity.
And why would you do that?
I'm going to go anyway.
Yeah. Well, and like, I think that as my character, well, there's the story that you guys have about bakers, rolling like a baker.
Yeah.
Where Nikki and I roll up characters and we tend to roll absurdly well characters. Like, my first character I ever rolled was like an 18, a 17, well,
you got to your second ability stat. And I just stopped you right there because it was like, I don't know, 16 and then 18.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, stop right there because it was just you and me rolling it just in some side room at your house. And I went out and got a buddy of ours who was hanging out on the couch. And I think your husband was just coming home at the time too. I'm like, you guys come in here and watch this and then sign this line.
saying that you bore witness
to this because.
Yeah. And that was a crazy character, which I only played for, I think we only played like 4 or 5 weeks or something like that. But now Magnus is actually, you know, obviously he's a fighter. He's got amazing constitution, amazing strength, but everything else is pretty much average to below average, actually.
Oh, yeah, I never realized that.
Yeah, and so that's why Magnus tends to do things where, like, for instance, if we ever get to the fight that we got into. but, like, there's that one when we were outside the cave. Everyone was like, okay, get ready. And Magnus just, like, bursts out and runs forward.
And does the like, intimidates for,
12,
like...
And, yeah. Yeah, intimidates, and there's, like, 12 goblins and, you know, that dog and Manchester was running out. And,
yeah, that fight outside the Nebar cave.
Yeah, exactly. Just like run out and do stupid shit that just Magnus would do because he's like, hey, this is a good idea. I'm going to protect everyone.
And those guys are fuckers.
And they're fuckers. I can beat them. You know, and he just does it.
But then the dice have their own story to tell and they agreed with that decision.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So should we get back to the fight?
Yeah, speaking of caves,
at some point.
Yeah. We were in one.
So we're all buffed up, and yep. Magnus is 5 feet from the floor of the cave, of a higher level.
It was kind of like a big stair step down, like outside of our vantage point.
It was 50 feet up, and then it was 30 feet up, and then 20 feet.
And that's when they realized we were there, and initiative started.
Yes.
And then everything...
With me 5 feet in the air.
I'm still in the hallway.
You're behind me, I think.
So it's Magnus 5 foot,
and then Tobias and Magnus.
Tobias at the top.
Yeah.
And then Byington behind Tobias, Taro behind Boddington.
Yeah, I saw this fight, all these monsters down there, and I told George to stay at the back of the hallway.
Yep.
So then...
But that tower was as strong as it can be.
I don't know how it started, but I ended up getting pelted with arrows, I think, in
they
the
just started
round.
Shooting and...
And critical aim.
Oh, I got a critical arrow.
Right away, first thing.
Even though it was a critical... Wolfie rolled really low on the actual damage.
I think it was
damage.
A goblin arrow.
Was it arrow or a crossbow bolt?
I don't remember. They were both shooting at me.
Well,
because the were-rats had...
Times two. Yeah, it was times three.
Well, I think they were crossbows.
No, it was a times three. Right. It was a times three because he rolled like 2 ones and a...
Oh, but he was...
And a 4 or something like that.
It was D4.
And I ended up getting like D6. 6 points. Yeah.
And that motivated Boddington to... What's that?
You know what that is.
He did.
Don't act dumb.
Metagame. No. It was his blur extract because he saw all these ranged attacks coming in and he wanted to get out there too and decided to step out on this ledge, knowing full well that I've seen Tobias try to step on a ledge and go tumbling down, and I've seen Violet step on a ledge and go tumbling down. So I'm being really cautious and I'm like, this isn't so bad.
Well, because you...
Pumped up dex.
Yeah, at that time my dex was pumped and everything else, but we are still relatively, in relative close quarters.
Yes.
That a familiar bead of light comes shooting across the sky.
Oh, God.
And I remember having a little conversation to you.
We'd seen the sorcerer.
Yeah.
Little goblin.
The goblin. I said, look at that guy. He can do bad stuff. I'm telling you.
If you see a light coming at us.
A little ball of light.
It's bad.
It's bad.
It's going to go boom. Big boom.
Yeah.
So of course, we see this.
It goes boom. Tobias and Magnus made our save, which made us only get like 400 points of damage.
We all saved 16 damage.
Was it 16?
Yeah. On a save.
On a save, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's half damage. So you get full damage, you're getting 32 damage.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, which, we're fifth level, presumably that'll hurt you a lot, but should kill you. But guess who goes down right away? Is Boddington.
Well, at that point, I got struck by an arrow.
So you got struck by an arrow after that.
Right. And
there's a lot of chaos.
Yes.
And it's a fighting kerfuffle. And shooting.
Kerfuffle.
And fireballs and so on and so forth. But the gist of it is that at those fireballs are going off. Luckily, I had cast Protection from Fire on myself.
Yeah, so he was doing the violent thing.
Magnus has got a million hit points and was doing good on your reflex saves.
Yeah, I mean, I made him, I have a reflex save of 2. That's awesome.
Oh, shit.
But
Boddington goes down, and that's Boddington Tobias.
Well, before I Tobias, though, because I was up on that ledge, didn't Wolfie have me roll an acrobatics check to maintain my balance once I got hit?
Yep.
And I came tumbling down.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man.
And so then, you know, we took
and
care of
prone and, it was
a bunch of dire rats and were rats that were right next
to
us. This whole time, I'm still stuck in the tunnel.
Yeah.
Because these
I'm climbing down.
These dire rat things or whatever come crawling along the wall.
Yeah.
I don't know how
they got up there.
How they did that, but they like surrounded me in the tunnel.
Wow.
They come feeding in.
So my focus goes to the one that's like on my backside, which could get to George.
Yeah.
So I could care less what these people are doing down there.
And you don't even know because I'm 50 feet down on the floor. And I make eye contact with that one goblin that was casting the spells in. So I see this opportunity to use my True Strike extract, which gives me that unreal bonus to a ranged attack, which is what Boddington does. And I have a Thunderstone, which is a big boom rock that disrupts spellcasters, among other things, by making them deaf. And so I'm investing in that to do this long-range throw across the whole cave thing.
Which worked beautifully.
It worked beautifully.
Until the spellcaster actually still succeeded.
Yeah, as a consequence, the dice thought they'd counter that decision.
Well, it gives them succeeded. A 20% spell failure.
So every
chance isn't that difficult.
That he was casting spells after that, he still was able to, you know, still pull it off.
So then through all this, Boddington goes down. Taro's fighting dire rats up in the top, and Tobias and Magnus are kind of in the thick of this.
Wait, Taro's shooting ranged attacks from, like, adjacent squares. Yeah.
Taking attacks of opportunity. I'm like,
I know. He's like, trying to metagame. He's like, don't do it. And he's like, and shooting it.
That's what Taro would do.
Caves might not be your specialty.
Do you have rapid shot with that? Oh, sweet, sir.
Just pumped up ranger stuff. I have point blank shot, precise shot, rapid reload.
Magnus got to use something that I've been waiting to use for a while, a feat called Dazzling Display, which...
did you do your rage when Boddington dropped?
I didn't. See, I always forget about
it. Man.
I know, and that's why I like... And Wolfie even said, I should have reminded you about it. And I'm like,
Magnus, get angry.
I should remember.
Yeah, you should remember.
Like, I should remember.
We're going to remember now.
Playing through 40 monsters. You have enough to try to think through.
Yeah.
You know, I've only got my one character.
So basically, at this point, Magnus goes down this hill, and he's standing there in front of 15?
A slew of, who knows?
Probably 15 of the various monsters down
there. That's exaggerated. A lot.
45!
Yeah, there was at least
120!
At least!
Plus 11.
And Dazzling Display is basically a feat that allows you to use the Intimidate skill to demoralize a foe, but instead of just one, which is a full round or a standard action, I think, to do one enemy, which is all you can do without this feat.
Hmm.
This feat allows you to demoralize all foes within 30 feet.
Wow.
So it's basically like Magnus
walks down in front of 15.
120!
120 monsters! And
all within 30 feet.
Swinging his axe. Around and basically succeeded on, I think, almost all of them.
I think there's like two that you didn't.
Two that didn't.
You like see a stalagmite that's like 2 feet in diameter and you just like bite it off.
yeah,
right. around and just start chopping at it.
Well, it's directly related to the weapon.
Oh, okay.
So it's directly related to having weapon proficiency, and I don't remember what the other prerequisite is for it. Sure. But
so you cut up a...
It's basically like swinging my bloody axe like a candle, you know, and then go... blood.
and I believe that gives them the shaken condition or something.
It makes them like shaken, that? And then for every however much you exceed their, by I think five. The DC is something like 10 plus their hit dice plus their wisdom modifier, if I remember correctly. And so if you exceed that number by 5, then you shake them for an additional round. And every 5 okay. you exceed it by, they're shaken for an
it's
additional
like
round.
It's like the Savage World Rays.
Well, and I happened to roll extremely well on it, and being a quark.
Baker. Oh, sorry.
being a quark, half-orc.
Quark.
For mechanics, I'm a half-orc.
Right.
But I'm a quark. Oh, I forgot! Before, when they were like, Boddington was talking to Magnus at one point, like yelled something to him, and he was
yelled something in orc.
He was trying to yell something in orc.
And I speak orc.
And Tara goes, "Are you a fucking orc?"
And Tobias says, "Yes."
And I go, no, we're linguists.
Yeah.
We know
yeah.
many languages. And like, I actually knew a few languages. I mean, I know 4.
So then he started saying things in Gnomish.
Gnome and Sylvan. And
yeah.
Magnus is playing along, even though Magnus doesn't know.
But I called Magnus out, but then kind of...
No, that waited till later. So this was in the middle of the fight when he yelled it. And then later it came up again.
Yeah.
I'm like, sorry.
And that was the part you were talking about us throwing gold at him.
So basically, yeah. So basically, the end of it was, you know, these folks were all demoralized. Most of them ran off.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the goblins ran off because they were shaken and they were just
I was messing one of them up with spiritual hammer.
Yeah, you're the badass one. Which I think was Rasputin, though we did not get any kind of confirmation on that.
He was the leader.
He was the leader. He was the, you know, the tough looking one of everybody. But he eventually got away.
Yeah, we were doing actually very well considering there's 120 monsters.
Well, and
I killed 2 dire rats.
Yeah.
And Francesca.
That's what our fifth party member's all about.
Yeah. Francesca had actually given Magnus a silver dagger, saying, "There will be more of these were rats down there. You should use this silver dagger." Well, what's a dagger that's one, is it 1d4?
Yes.
Versus, even if there's a damage reduction of 10, D12, Magnus's great axe that's
your addition
plus,
for
was like, because it had bull strength and power attack and all these
but
things.
But it's not
like
even that, it's
17.
Just like, Magnus would use his axe. He's just like, screw this tiny little knife.
Yeah, there. And like, I kept thinking about it as Megan, should I take out this dagger? And then I'm like, what the fuck am I gonna do with the dagger? He's gonna poke you in the eye.
Yeah.
You know? So,
it was almost like back in that scene with Francesca, and she's handing the scene. You're like,
oh, yes, thank you.
Really?
Well, I gave her like a masterwork dagger that I had. Like, well, here, take this one.
Yeah,
I don't use this either.
I use it as a toothpick sometimes.
Yeah. So then Tobias and Magnus, I think, together. Tobias saved Boddington, and then Tobias' spiritual hammer and Magnus, and then later Tobias, when he got down there, finished off the rest of the were-rats.
They ran.
No, there was like still two or three. There was 2 or 3
up,
left.
But yeah.
There was some killed. We killed the last 2 or 3, and then the leader guy got away with like what I think was an invisibility potion.
Yeah,
he took something and disappeared. Yeah. My assumption is
actually he was Medigan. just inside of the cave. I think he took a heal potion and ran off.
Well, I mean, the way he worded it was he blinks out.
Whether that was magically or through shadows of running through the passageway.
All we know is he disappeared.
Anyway,
yeah.
So then, fight's over.
Fight's over, and we're still, I mean, at least Boddington's interest was, okay, I'm alive again. Sweet. Let's get to know this little guy again.
No, Boddington starts talking to the owl.
Yeah.
So by the way, speak with animals.
Yep, I have my speak with animals.
And Steve is getting like, it's like almost 11 o'clock or something right now.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm going home, I'm going to bed. No, I want to ask the owl more questions.
It's like, what's your favorite food?
Wait. Now you want to keep me from getting a night's sleep so you can talk to an owl? Okay, just so I understand.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the funniest parts is that Jake's like, okay, I cast speak with animals. And he's like, so what's your favorite food? And Nikki's response was, whoo. I'm like,
no,
you
I can
cast speak with animals. You have to talk.
What was that first time? I was like, I don't know.
Ooh. You like
food.
Well, and that was where the whole conversation of what's your favorite thing to eat.
Weasels!
Yeah. And we kind of had an agreement, though, that I have this thing and
it looks like a Manchester, weasel, but it's not a weasel.
And it's here, just like you are, to protect us, and we will protect you, and we had this teamwork agreement going on.
Well, I think all I really cared about is you said it wasn't a weasel.
Yes.
So then Joe's like, it's just like, it's part of me.
George. Right.
Yeah, it's not George an actual weasel.
Okay.
Then I won't eat it, I guess.
And
I guess
then we got to kind of asking you about, okay, what were you doing? What brought you down here? And you talked about your ear plan and how
ears
get you gold. Right.
Well, and the whole thing was then you said, I say, well, how much do you get for the ears? And he's like,
well, because at first they're just like asking, they're like, so do you like the ears? Are they pretty?
Are you collecting?
Are you going to make a necklace?
You can make a necklace. And like, Magnus asked that.
And Tara's just like, no.
That's gross.
Why would I do that? I'm going to sell them.
And so then it came up, well, how much money do you get for the ears? And it was, oh, I get 5 gold. And Magnus said, oh, I'm so sorry you didn't get any goblins. There were 4
because all the goblins ran away.
So there were 4 goblins there. So Magnus is like, well, here's 25 gold.
And Tara's
extra.
Like, awesome! and then Boddington goes, and here's 30!
And in true Magnus and Boddington fashion, we just started, which Violet loves. Right? Tom's over there shaking his head at us.
Rolling his eyes.
Violet in some other plane is going, oh my god.
But Tara just starts looking at him and she's like, can I have some more?
I ended up giving you 230 gold.
Yeah, we start giving him hundreds. And they're like, how much do you want? And I'm like, 100?
So we're like, here you go.
And they each gave me 100. And then later I'm just like, can I have some more?
And we both give him another 100.
Let's see what they give.
I don't know what gold Wolfie allowed Taro to have going into this game, but I'm quite confident
she had nothing.
As players, I had no more gold than you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, while that's something that Boddington would totally do like he did with the leprechaun, that...
Yeah, Magnus.
I don't know. It still kind of allowed you to get up to speed currency.
Get a little more money.
Well, not up to speed. She has like 400 and...
Right, but relative
gold.
To zero.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, it's something that, as a player, Magnus has always given away money.
Yeah.
Whether it's buying Violet presents or, you know...
Leaving 300 gold in the tree because a leprechaun told me to.
Right. Neither one of our characters are like, we really want money.
Yeah, experience
like,
is the
money.
Currency.
I guess I don't know what to... Oh, you want some? Here you go.
Yeah.
What was Tobias doing with all of this, the Arcania money? Just like sighing.
Shaking his head.
What are you doing?
You can do what you want with your money.
Right.
I don't really care. I think you're not smart.
Well, and Tobias not necessarily likes money, but likes a certain lifestyle.
Yes.
Tobias was the first one to live wealthy.
And he realizes that it's something you just don't hand out. You have to earn it.
Yeah, well, you don't hand it out, but I don't hoard any money at all.
Right.
Because I know there's plenty of money out there. And just because I'm not currently in a position where I have a lot of money, I should be, and I will be, and my family is, and people I know are, so, yeah, I spend it, but I spend it for myself. Yeah.
Well, and I, as a character, actually have almost a hard time spending all the money that I have right now. As a fighter.
Yes.
Because I buy potions, and then I buy presents for people. And that's about all I buy. So you guys have talked about in the past, like when we go to town, Wolfgang has us write a list of everything we want to do while we're in town. And Magnus's list is exactly the same every single time.
Well, but
hang out with Boddington, buy Violet a present, tell Tobias how awesome he is, bake some bread.
What are you
going to
do for
Taro
now, though, is the question.
I know. See, then I have to add to the list.
Well, you have a business, too, with all that.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, you have this business, so
I
you actually make money. Yeah.
I'm a baker.
But, I mean, the baking business and the going down and risking your life in a dungeon business, the profit margin's a little different.
Right, I think, like, the last month that my...
Baking breads, killing zombies, I don't know.
Yeah, the last month that I was there, I did freaking ridiculous on my craft rolls, and I still made, like, 144 gold. You know, like, we're, like, out doing a mission, and someone's like... Well, and then you find a sack, and it's got 40,000 platinum in it.
I believe we have 2 treasure chests.
We did. We found
full
some.
Of, we don't know. They're
we
locked.
Found
we haven't unlocked
they're
them.
They're heavy, and therefore
two
valuable.
Large, sturdy chests, and a coin purse with 20 platinum, but the platinum have weird spiders on them.
Ew.
and a red stone.
Which I've been informed by the DM that I will get my magic item from the chest. So if there's something magic, I get it.
More magic.
More magic. I'm excited to meet Violet. Because I don't really get Violet yet.
Like, I think you guys will probably hit it off, at least better than you and Boddington. I mean, just personality-wise.
Yeah.
Boddington and Magnus are very similar. Violet is, while she's still a gnome, she's not quite, and she's curious. Very curious, but she's not quite as frivolous.
No. I think of her, she's kind of like the scientist all the time. And that's why, like, when we were in that different plane, she's like, but this is a different plane. There's so much scientific adventure here. Why are we leaving now? I'm bleeding out.
Because you've just made something explode, and I'm dying about it.
But also, you also don't care for Tobias being so serious all the time. And so it's, as your stereotypical scientist who's very serious, that doesn't really fit your mind.
No. Well, the whole thing is...
Because you're still a gnome.
Right. And I just look at Tobias and like, the experiment for Tobias is I'm going to try to humiliate him. So I get a pony and I ride on it and all classy looking. That's a gesture of Tobias getting all sad because he can see that I'm looking all regal on my pony.
Which I totally envision Violet riding a My Little Pony.
Oh, cool. Exactly what it is. If not a unicorn, yeah.
Oh, God, if I could get a unicorn, that would be the
But, like, a chubby little... Nikki will get this because she's a girl. But, you know, the chubby little ponies.
Yeah, my sister had them.
It's got a little symbol of a star on its left cheek.
Yeah, there'd be a little star on that.
Every My Little Pony is a little different.
Ooh, snap.
Some have the horns, some are different colors, some have different hair.
Violets would have the little constellation.
And it would have a knockout gorgeous vein. Absolutely. And just, like, the longest ridiculous tail.
Vein or mane?
And I'd cast ghost sound.
Mane.
I'd cast ghost sound and make it kind of do a little horse.
No, you fart. Are swatted on the ass trying to make me fall.
Yes. Well,
that was funny.
Only when you get too proud, which is whenever you get on it.
Whenever I'm on it.
But the thing is, Taro probably won't get along with Violet either because he just doesn't get people. It's almost like he has absolutely no social skills. Like, it's like...
he doesn't get along with anyone.
Like, he doesn't understand people's thought processes.
But Boddington was able to figure out that you like pickles.
Yes.
And I have pickles, so we've got something.
We've got something.
That's not really a common Magnus bond.
It is!
Oh, do you like chewing gum? I like chewing gum. Let's be best friends!
But earlier, you like saying
stuff? All right.
You were saying he's very intelligent.
He is intelligent,
What's that intelligence based in? Like, I mean, what's he like really like to think about, or why is he so smart? Is it like a street smart? Or
that's wisdom.
That would be wisdom, so
But what's he's obviously knowledgeable
about... He just
about
knows stuff.
Nature like, and...
He pays attention and understands how things work, but he doesn't understand social situations.
He's almost like someone with Asperger's.
He's a lot like Sheldon.
But doesn't mind getting dirty.
It's that intelligent, like really gets it, but just doesn't quite have time for the social aspect of life.
Got it.
Like, I don't really care to understand.
And just the metagame, because I'm just thinking about our first interaction between us two. What are your knowledges?
Why don't you ask that at the table?
Okay. All right.
Metagame.
I think what it is too is like character because I had to make because I had to make Taro at fifth level.
Right.
I haven't quite developed him enough yet.
Okay.
And I don't have this elaborate backstory that Megan has because Wolfgang actually didn't want me to make super.
Yeah, he didn't want me to either.
And I'll like plan going.
And I listen to the DM, unlike Megan.
No, I just look at you. Hear that? Okay.
Don't kill my owl.
Can we talk a little bit about starting from first level versus starting at a higher level? Yeah. We haven't really done things where we started at a higher level, partially because A, we don't want to.
Right.
Yeah.
There's so many advantages of starting at first level. That why would you start at a higher level? I don't understand when I see forums.
The only incentive that I see is that we kind of have more or less the same campaign life, so that when we start at this level, more or less within a campaign advance at 10 levels on average. We don't really get much past the low teens when we're playing a character, but we've always been kind of curious, what is it like past 12th level? We've never really seen it. But for us to want to get there and understand our natural life of a campaign, what if we all just decided to start a campaign at 5th level? Then we'd probably end up getting to 15th or 16th or 17th level. Who knows?
There's a difference, though, between the way I think we play than maybe other people do. Like, this is the story for us. Like, it is not about always killing the monsters. It is,
we can have as much fun being first level as we are 13th level.
What makes it fun for us is that maybe we do fall off a cliff and see what happens, you know? Or jump off one.
The fun of failure.
Yeah, or, you know, you do things wrong and you see how things develop and stuff. And it's the way we play that is so different from some other people sometimes.
But for me personally, I kind of like the thought of being so fragile at first level.
Yeah.
And like one hit could just kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could just outright kill you.
And there's much more of a contrast between first level and eighth level as there is between maybe 8th level and 16th level.
But I mean, just to be devil's advocate here.
Different from Megan.
I am always agreeable and kind and nice. That while we were doing these different stories, I spent some time reading through feats. And I'll look at a feat and, like, you know, every once in a while, if
Jake, look at this one. Jake, look
like, melt someone with your
eyeballs. You can't get there until 12th level.
Well, there's one that's, like, deadly finish, and I found it in the Ultimate Combat book, which I never have time to look through all the extra books, and there's so much stuff you can get for combat feats. And it's like, well, you have a base attack of 11.
Yeah.
And you have to have diehard endurance and this feat, and I don't know how many.
The prerequisites ones, but oftentimes were longer than the actual description.
Well, I mean, those are more for, like, the sorcerer ones and stuff, but they're like, the weird class ones.
Right.
You know, where you have this weird bloodline. But, I mean, there's so many where it's, like, you get Vital Strike, and then you get Devastating Strike, and you go this and this and this, and I keep looking at these feats going, God, this would be so cool to have.
What if we just roll up, like,
a... So maybe that's a challenge for us.
Well, I think it is, actually.
Spend, like, a 2-3 week module, because they do have modules out there that are engineered. This is designed for 12th level characters.
Well, I think, Jake, that you could actually push us because of the fact that we are going to reoccur, we're going to come back to a particular character, and we're going to build that character up to those high levels.
It's a much longer time scale, though.
But which is fine. I mean, because I personally feel, as a DM, I get a little lost after we get to about...
Because
10 to 20 is like, it's a different ball game.
Yeah.
You know,
but
and it's
have
like
the least amount of experience in that. I don't know if that factors into it. Sure, it's more complicated, but I don't know if
things start to break down. If you're going to have a combat that lasts 3 hours, how much role playing do you get in there? Right. How much town time do you have? And that's
you
what
are
happens
a cleric with how many spells to choose from or how many decisions to make.
It's like you have 30 seconds to decide your move.
Because we do have a little egg timer that sometimes gets long.
I have access to 8th level spells, and that I have a total of 20. I don't know how many.
Right.
I have an access to 20 some spells. What are you going to cast? You have 30 seconds.
And that's why it might be a fun exercise to just maybe spend a week all making big top-level characters and then spending the next week trying them, but...
What I'm going to say is the challenge of creating a 5th-level character out from nothing was a lot of work.
Yeah.
Well, that's why, you know...
And the idea of honestly making a 12th-level character is just like, I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I don't want to...
I'd rather study for my calculus.
You also didn't have a whole lot of time.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah. I mean, I think felt like I had more time than I've ever had to create a character.
But it's a good point. If it takes you 8 hours to create a 12th level character...
And then you play for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So two sessions to build it and two sessions to...
But does it take 8 hours to create a character because you are obsessive about the exact organization? Not saying that... I'm saying that we all are. I'm saying that we're all like... I want my character to do this and this, and then I think about each thing that I do very carefully.
And I wade through 4 different books to make the right decision.
I'm sure there are people who are creating 12th level characters just going, 8 points there, 3 points there.
Anybody out there that's listening has any points or topics or insight to the matter?
RPGAfterglow@gmail.com.
Bam.
Thank you.
Everybody.
A word from our sponsors.
Yes.
But seriously, if you do have experience creating these higher level characters, let us know what you've done and how it worked, whether it was awful, like
I
imagined
it to be.
Start every
school year in kindergarten.
Or if it was actually successful.
But as a DM, I think both me and Steve had to make, because we had your adversaries that were higher level. Mm-hmm. And it does take time to build them. Even still, after building them, you guys bought them. And I was like, you know what? There was a lot of spells I really should have used, but I just didn't think about it because I don't have that knowledge of those.
Or you didn't have time.
Yeah, you didn't have time. You didn't have knowledge of those four.
Because you killed it in four rounds.
Yeah. But the whole thing, you guys approached some higher level wizards, and I was like, oh, why don't I just use spells like blade defense or wall blade, you know, to prevent you from reaching them.
That's a beneficial aspect of the adventure paths and the mm-hmm. modules. Yeah. Is that when they introduce certain monsters, they have a part
in tactics.
Tactics before combat, during combat, the things that they would oftentimes go to
round
the spell.
One, right. Round two.
Not to say that you have to do these things, but that's kind their of their options. Right. Their options, that what they go for.
It's like their main decisions.
Right.
We build our own worlds. And not to say that building your own worlds and starting with a high-level character are completely mutually exclusive, but the point of building your own world is starting, building it, watching your characters develop, getting through it. Perhaps if we're going to do a time where we actually sit and say, let's play with a high-level character, then that's going to be something that we're going to want to do in a module.
At least for the first run-through, to see, okay, what have they done to counter this epic force?
Well, if you're like, you start with, five characters or four characters that are 12th level, 10th level, at what point are you like, why are you guys all here? We have this chance to, like, develop as a adventure.
Because as we're developing our characters, Wolfie's developing his world.
Right.
Yeah.
And the thing is this world, this time around, I feel as though there's still plenty of intrigue at 5th level that could propel us to 10th. To 12th level. You know, that's the main thing. It's just like,
well, it's also
in a world, you need an element of intrigue to why we're doing things.
Yes, but I don't think it's about getting to a certain level. It's never about getting to a certain level. It's about getting to a certain point in the story.
It's not about winning.
but the intrigue is the sure story.
Is. Yes, but once the story is over, it doesn't matter if you're in first level or in 21st level.
Then it's done. Right.
Yeah, I mean,
the story is always going to be decided by the DM.
Right, but I can feel like there's plenty of story left. You know, sitting at fifth level,
like in a TV sometimes show, end the show there and it gets canceled and you just have to accept it. Or you could say, okay, that's a good point in the story, that there's a point of conclusion for this arc, right, that this Lord Nibar thing, we take him down, assumedly, eventually.
And that's then Violet the runs Gnome Town.
Yeah, Violet runs Gnome Town, but then we still have a good stride, so we decided to start another story arc in season two, as it's
yeah, you
as
could
it
always let that the next movie in the trilogy.
Well, it's when we were
another sequel.
Steve's campaign, and you know, that was when I was playing Lola, and Tom had Scarlet, and you had Zahn
Fawn.
And Wolfie was Wolfie's character.
He always picks a name that you'll never remember.
It was a barbarian.
Yeah. Well, regardless. The story
kind of had a dragon.
Yeah, the story ended. It could have continued.
I wanted a dragon so bad. And then they get one when I leave.
Yep.
But we had this dragon, and she was... There was all the story behind the dragon and the mystery. And
Penny.
We could have kept going with it. And I could see how we would have moved that into another thing. But at that point, it was, okay, we're done. You know, and this is the end of it.
It ended the story. Not that we couldn't ever go back, but we haven't ever. No. Gone back to a
campaign. And we play once a week, and every, you know, it's just that finite level of...
I think that worked to say the story was kind... I mean, we could have gone further.
You always can. It's like life.
But
it's you're creating this life, and it can go on. It can new things
as
can
long
happen.
As you have the creative energy behind it.
Yes,
the DM providing experiences and the players giving their reaction to those experiences.
But there's a definite arc. There's a story arc and I think that's what Steve was talking about, is that you have this story arc, and you know, and I was kind of discussing it as the intrigue. If you reach the conclusion of that story arc, it's really hard to motivate another story arc off that. The only way to have it is you got one story arc going, you have the next one coming in right on it, so that when they finish one, there's enough of that intrigue left
like
to propel
the
them
end
with
of the first
second.
Batman movie.
Right.
He gets the little, at the end of the movie, or like in all the
you
Avengers.
You have to be more specific.
Well, the first Dark Knight is Dark, Black Knight.
Dark
Knight. No, but well, you know, just that, I guess a more concise example is Nick Fury appearing at the end of all the Avengers movies. It's all leading up to something else. So that you have all these standalone adventures, but it's still leading to something else. And even then, you stick around and watch after the credits, and there's something else going on, and it goes into the next. Okay, there's more adventure. Yeah.
So it depends upon how much money the DM makes from each campaign? Is that what you're saying?
Currency is player and everyone's enthusiasm, I guess. Okay. And I mean, at least with this plan, with my adventure path, that it will provide a different experience for all of us, because while we aren't just sitting down and going till we get to the point where we're done, like we always have been, and then we switch DMs and storylines and characters and everything else, that we will then return to my adventure path once Wolfie's done, and as far as if we still want to maintain this plan, then there'll be another DM, and then we'll return to the adventure path again and continue from there. And then go to another campaign, and then return back.
And I'm kind of excited because we've never come back to characters before.
Right.
Yeah. We have never done that. I mean, we've always said, we could go back, and we keep our old character sheets.
But because this adventure path is released in chapters that are four levels at a time,
we took a pause.
There's actually, like, while we would typically forget what we're doing, where we're going, I have that momentum in this book form. And I think as I've been looking ahead and as it's been going, it's been much more open. Like, they assume that you take it in your own direction.
I've never experienced an end.
Like, no, you didn't.
No, I've never.
Which was really unfortunate because you left before you could experience an end in my world. And that I've always felt bad because that was the one world where I had really developed my conclusions.
Uh-huh.
But because it just disintegrated, we never
and
got
I loved
to,
the story that you
had
for
the story
my
was building up so much, and I, just, I know.
I've been
7 years
swashbuckling. It's hard to say.
Swash.
But yeah, and that because
well, it's like I came in originally with you guys. I had this lower level character that played with higher level characters. We still didn't really finish that one.
No, because we were like, well, this is a bad idea.
Yeah,
at least mechanically,
like there was no real conclusion there. And then we went to this other one, and then I moved, and then I've come in and played like I played the 2 week module, but we still couldn't really finish
it. So your role playing experience was like starting a movie up
and then
halfway,
getting to, like,
and then cutting it out before the
or getting
ending.
To like 3/4. The way through a movie, and then
so Nicole, it you screwed it up.
Yeah. So you
came back.
But no, that and I you know, going back to that as a DM, I think that's one of the real learning things of being a DM is the first few times you didn't think about the story arc. You guys would just start to peter out of like directions and small little dungeons and stuff to develop. And go, hey, let's create the story arc. Let's think more about that story arc. That's when it becomes really exciting to become, you know, to do the DMing, because it's like you can see how you're guiding people. And the thing is to have a story arc, but not lead them by their nose. How do you do that? To get that balance between it's a sandbox, but there's an arc. There's, you know, there's definite
well,
characters.
It's like you have a plan, but you go off in different branches throughout it.
Right.
Like, and you don't move people in a certain direction just because you want to get to the end of your plan.
And that was the most fun I had with the adventure path, because I think more than anything, adventure path is like, here's a pre-written story, here's a railroad. In a module, it's much more because it's a shorter span. But in this adventure path, it was, here's the setting, here's all these NPCs, here's this experience. But the story's supposed to go in this direction, and by the end of page 34, they're supposed to be here. As the weeks went on, and I got more comfortable with it, and you guys got more comfortable with your characters and more familiar with the world, you'd suddenly latch onto this NPC. Or you'd suddenly latch onto this lead, or have this ambition, or these certain things would come up that I'm glad I had the experience from being a player before this to see how, wait, this is where I'm supposed to play into that interest. It's not in the book, but who cares? So
there was a point in that art, in that adventure story, in that adventure path
yeah,
where it said, once the characters slay this NPC, and what did we do?
Did you guys make friends with them or something?
Oh, yeah, we forgave him.
we spared him, and that's how this is different from like video games and other sorts of games that you might play.
You must beat this character to get to the next level.
A video game would have the action music playing and this guy standing with the sword,
the cutscene,
and you couldn't move on until you
beat the boss,
and it would fade out, and then the cutscene would happen. Right,
but that's we found another way to that.
Luckily, by the time it got to that point, I was like, "Well, I have this wizard that's a total pacifist and wants to find any option other than violence." And I do have this barbarian, but he's kind of a Casanova.
He only gets angry when women are involved.
Right. So for the most part, he just wants to be, you know, like...
Protect the damsel in distress.
Right. Protection is his game. Not so much just blood, you know. Then we have this archer, this Fletcher that is... Has that a similar sort of sympathy.
Protecting women.
He's a craftsman first, you know.
So there's protection, there's empathy, and then we have a cleric. So we have these four members that, in a town setting especially, where they are... Right. And so even though there's this character that betrays them, sets them up to get killed, and they come back, and he's still trying to find them, fight them off and get them killed, it gets to that point where...
We drill down to the actual root cause of that.
Yeah.
And that's what we went after, rather than killing the symptoms.
Well, and I think Wolfgang has made comment to that, too, that we're doing that in this campaign, where he keeps expecting to introduce someone and just go, and then they'll kill him or her, and that will be that. And we're like, oh, dear friend, let's talk.
Yeah, I've had to develop, at least through the adventure path, I ended up realizing, fortunately, ahead of time, that maybe I'll have to develop more NPCs, because the stuff that they're supposed to find on this dead carcass, they're not going to find out. So I'm going to have other people come along, you know, just ways you adapt. But then you find out that you have more experiences outside of what's on the printed page. That's more rewarding for the table, because it's actually catered to them.
Right. And that's what makes a really good DM, is someone that can maybe take an adventure path so they don't have to invest ridiculous amounts of time beforehand, but can stray from it later on. They can, they're
flexible enough to
resilient and adaptable.
Thank you, Nicole. Yes.
That's like
a very corporate speak. Yeah, I thought that you'd move past that.
No.
But I think it works both ways, though. At least when I was experiencing this for the first time, as much as it's fun to be a player and to say, I'm going to do this, and then you get that experience, and it's totally unique based on what your input is, that it's also fun and rewarding as the DM to go, I had no idea that this is how tonight was going to work out. But because you guys provided that, it went in this direction.
Well, and we had that moment in the current campaign where we went to Duxbury? We were going to go to the Astro Lab, and Wolfie had totally thought we were going to go to the cave and
the Nebar cave back before we ended up actually going.
And so he's like, and you run into 18 swarms because I need to delay you. Because
it's 9:45 and we got to get some gameplay in.
And, you know, so like just had us fight some things along the way, which is not something that we always do. You know, it's not.
Rarely.
And you walk and you encounter this and you fight it and then you keep walking and the next day you encounter something.
Yeah.
No, we encounter things when they're relevant, I think. You know, while it seemed relevant to us, not knowing, through his subtle, not so subtle hints of, I don't know what this character's name is.
Well, and then the reality of it was too late in the night, even if we got to the front door then, it's like we wouldn't go into the door anyway. Right.
Being adaptable enough and to create something that would make it work, Wolfie's, of course, a little self-deprecating, so he has to, like, make fun of himself in doing it, but... You know, handling that situation well.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of late enough in the evening to throw a swarm at y'all.
I think it's a world's record. Is this the world's longest podcast ever?
When you think about
Of all podcasts ever.
Two people talking for about an hour on average. Yeah. You increase that by 150%. We got about that length going on in the end here.
Well, so I think we should make
a toast to everyone that's made it to this point.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
And I'm excited for next week to hear more of what's going on.
Right, because Mika will be coming back totally in the dark again because he has to leave.
You're still liquid.
I'm still liquid.
Speaking of liquid, I have to piss.
All right.
So we'll see you again, everybody. Signing off, I'm Jake.
And I'm Mako.
And I'm Steve.
Nicole. Megan.
And this is RPG Afterglow.
I am collecting
underneath. Here, this is...
Don't look at the... What are you doing, Mako?
Be quiet.
Tom, what are you doing?
It's a secret!
Why do you do that?
Well, let me look at your character sheet.
Ever!
Let me look at your character sheet.
Calm down.